Blog Talk Radio.
You are now connected to the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Dardy.
Taking on 2,000 years of indoctrination, 2 hours at a time.
Sink or swim, deep end information.
Asking questions no one else will.
Parabiblical research, spiritual technology, personal empowerment.
Be your own guru.
Master your own ascension.
Guide your own spirit.
And now, showing you how, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Dardy.
Greetings from sunny Central Florida. Maybe overcast Central Florida. As I look out the window, it's another beautiful July day. And July and August are often referred to as the price we pay for living in Florida all year long. January, February, March, December, November, October. It's beautiful. That's why we live here today. Well, like I said, today is the price we pay, something like that, the next 2 months. But at any rate, I hope that wherever you are, you're having a great day and you're enjoying what nature is bringing to you. This is Jeffrey Dardy. We're here with the Fresh Daily Show from Fresh Daily Co., Gourmet Coffee, and Skateboarding. FreshDailyCo.com. I'm enjoying a little Fresh Daily Co. myself, the coffee, not the skateboarding. But here we are back again, bringing you a bite-sized version of our two-hour weekly radio program. You can go to JeffreyDardy.com or ChristianWhistleblower.com and learn more about all the other things that we are offering. And we've broadened the offering. And we've done so because I wanted to be more inclusive and more descriptive of the things that I'm passionate about. So spirit is, of course, and remains number one. But we also want to talk about spirit. We want to talk about culture. We want to talk politics. We want to talk life. So we're really, I guess, a little bit of a rebranding, the Unindoctrination Center. That's what JeffreyDardy.com, ChristianWhistleblower.com is. And unindoctrination, beyond just the spiritual, into the cultural, the political, and into life itself, because they all really are interrelated parts of the big game of life. And life is a game. If your life's not a game, if you don't feel like you're playing a game, you're doing it wrong. Successful people believe life is a game. Spiritually successful, politically successful, financially successful, successful across the board. Speaking of successful, I want to open today's show with a quote, Thomas Jefferson. He said, "I'm a real Christian." That is to say, a disciple of the doctrines of Jesus. Of course, I would change that a little bit to say, I am a real Christian. That is to say, a disciple of the doctrines of Yeshua. Because I don't like that name, Jesus. I think it's plastic Jesus. I think it's a mantra, a code word, a magic word, even in some instances, that throws us totally into cognitive dissonance just at the mention. Jesus, just the mention of your name. Our ability to think goes out the window. We all become insane. Losing the ability to think rationally and losing the ability to study and interpret information. Jesus, God, those are both words that throw us in a cognitive dissonance, but that's another show. And Jefferson also called Christ's teachings the most sublime and benevolent code of morals which has ever been offered to man. And he urged getting back to the plain and unsophisticated precepts of Christ. And that's really what we are all about. And I say we, and it's really me at this point, but I say we because it's, you know, the folks that are there supporting us, you know, in spirit, I would like to think more of them would begin to support us in more substantial ways, like money. You can't do this without some of that. So it just is what it is. But we are getting back to the plain and unsophisticated precepts of Yeshua. We know that we're doing something no one else is doing, and we're giving information you're not going to get anywhere else. And we leave it in your court how you'd like to respond to that. But we finished last week asking what some think is a ludicrous question, asking, did Paul invent the doctrine of the second coming? And though it does sound ludicrous to modern ears, the fact of the matter is, and I know those facts are, you know, troublesome things. I know that it's much easier to just go on believing in your little la-la land of make-believe, that it doesn't matter. I believe what I believe, and my opinions are my opinions. My faith is my faith. My convictions are my convictions. Well, that's all well and good. But you can have a conviction that gravity does not exist, and that will not make you float. The facts are the facts, and I'm just here to report them. How you deal with them is totally and completely up to you. But the facts of the matter are that there is no mention of the second coming from any of the original 12 apostles of Yeshua until AD 66. That's at least three decades after Yeshua was gone from Judea. And then when they did mention it in AD 66, they mentioned it by way of attacking the concept, as we'll see today. And, you know, people, oh, well, AD 66, that's probably when they began writing. No, the first book written by one of the original 12 apostles of Jesus was a book written by James. That was written in AD 47. No mention of the second coming. Mark wrote in AD 57. No mention of the second coming. Peter wrote in AD 60, no mention of the second coming. Luke wrote in AD 63, no mention of the second coming. You would have thought they were all Spanish because every single one of them said nada. Nada thing did they say about the second coming. And really, when you look at the doctrine, the fact that the original apostles of Yeshua didn't talk about it, didn't address it, didn't bring it up. When you look at the doctrine itself, you can begin to understand why and why they didn't bring it up and why they would avoid it, and you can understand its true origin. How the second coming is used betrays its true origin. It's used one of two ways. It's used as a carrot or it's used as a stick. You know, it's used as the carrot in the sense of the just hold on till Jesus comes, brother. Just hang on. Just hold on. Don't worry about injustices in this world. Don't worry about trying to improve yourself. Don't worry about trying to actually understand what the words of Scripture mean. Just go along with the program and hold on till Jesus comes, brother. Hold on till Jesus comes, sister. That's the carrot approach. And then there's the stick approach that says, stay in line or get left behind. Both of those ideas feed compliance. Both of those ideas feed obedience. Both of those ideas feed fear. Both of them feed control. And both of them produce serfs and sheep and weed out the rams. This is the Santa Claus Jesus, the Santa Claus plastic Jesus, the guy who's making a list, checking it twice, the guy who's going to find out if you're naughty or nice, the guy that sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake. Jesus knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. You better not shout, you better not pout, you better not cry. I'm telling you why. Because Jesus Christ is coming back again. It's the same exact thing. It's the same exact control. It's the same exact carrot. It's the same exact stick. Now, of course, I've said this to you many times, and I do not tire of repeating it, that Yeshua said, His kingdom's already here, that it won't come in outward displays. There's nothing to look for. There's nothing to watch for. Anybody that puts forth an idea, a doctrine, a teaching that there's signs of the times to come, that there are things to look for, that there's things to watch out for that are going to be emblematic, symptomatic, and signal the return of Jesus in the clouds, those are lies, those are fables, or they are possibly seeds of a false flag operation. Luke 17:20 is where Jesus said the kingdom's not coming in any outward displays. It's already here. It's in your heart. You're not filled with original sin, but you're filled with the spark of divinity within. And that simple statement, the kingdom of heaven is in you. You're not filled with original sin. You have the spark of divinity within. That message terrifies the establishment more than any other message, because once you grab a hold of the idea that you are the kingdom of God, that you have divinity within you, that you do not need help or forgiveness or salvation, when you realize that you don't need someone to come back to save you, what you need to work out your own salvation has already been provided, that's when you become a very dangerous person. When you realize that your ability and your capability to reclaim who you are and ascend to who you're going to be, once you realize that's under your own control, then you become someone who's terrifying to the establishment. This message that I'm preaching is the message they cannot afford for you to hear. Yeshua says, come on up, reclaim who you are, come on up to the Father, ascend up the layers of consciousness. Yeshua says, come on up. Pollyannity says, you're incapable of coming on up. Wait for the Lord to come back down. Do you see that? Yeshua says, come on up. Pollyannity says, you're incapable of coming up. Wow, wait for the Lord to come back down. I need to say that again. I had an attack on my throat. Yeshua says, come on up. Pollyannity says, you're incapable of coming on up. Wait for the Lord to come back down. They ridicule the kingdom of heaven message. They ridicule the concept of ascension and reclaiming who you were, and they are literally trying to keep you down. The man is trying to keep you down. Whether you're red, yellow, black, or white, you are all serfs in his sight. The Lord loves controlling all the children of the world. And if you look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, it's a prime example, and it is the first Pauline writing. We learned that last week, that 1 Thessalonians is the first Pauline writing. And it is the birth of the thief in the night scenario that we all have become so familiar with. The birth of the thief in the night scenario began here in Thessalonians chapter 5. I just want to show you it and take a look at it. And when we look at it, if we can get ourselves to a place where we are objective and not subjective, where we're able to actually look at things with an eye that is not clouded by glasses of a color of a denomination or a pet theory, it's very, very easy to understand. And the very first thing that Paul says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 is, of the time and seasons, brethren, you have no need that we write unto you, for you yourself know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. It is blatant, outright, complete defiance of the words of Yeshua. Yeshua clearly, plainly said, the kingdom of heaven does not come with any outward signs. And here's Paul saying, the signs of the times, brothers, you need to know, and you know perfectly well that they come as a thief in the night. How do they know perfectly well? Because Paul had been preaching it to them. For when they shall say, peace and safety, sudden destruction will come upon them. Of course, verse number one, times and seasons, focuses again on a future coming, not a present reality. And from the writing of 1 Thessalonians to the writing of today's newspaper, they, the establishment empowered by the Lord, the God of this world, has been trying to keep you focused on a future coming, not a present reality. Because if they can keep you living in the future, they don't have to worry about you taking control of your present and realizing who and what you are and beginning to grasp that great truth. And verse 2, of course, for the you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. That is 100% meant to scare you. I don't know how many of you remember the old Thief in the Night movie that you used to see at church. That was big in the United States. I'm not sure how widespread it was as far as the UK goes, but this was a Christian horror movie. It was designed with one purpose in mind, to scare people into giving their heart to Jesus. And I love how that whole school of evangelism is, and I used to be a practitioner of it, but scare people so bad that they take out eternal fire insurance. It's the complete opposite of what Yeshua really wants. Yeshua wants people to follow him because he wants them to ascend and he wants them to reclaim who they are. But even if you're looking in a Christian context, do you want people that are joining the church because they're afraid of hell, or do you want people that are joining the church because they're in love with Jesus? I'll leave you to ponder that. But it's a classic fear and control scenario as we move into verse 3. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them. It's a classic fear and control scenario. Stay in line, or you'll be left behind. And then verse number 4, he talks about, but you, brothers, you're not in darkness that day should overtake you as a thief. As long as you listen, as long as you comply with the Pauline doctrine, you're going to be okay. And then he goes on, and I want you to notice that he said, when they say peace and safety, sudden destruction is going to come upon them. When they say peace and safety, sudden destruction is going to come upon them. When you think back to the New Testament, who do you think of that had a message that was characterized by peace? Was there a person in the New Testament who was in fact called the Prince of Peace? Was there a person in the New Testament that said, my peace I give to you? Was there a person in the New Testament that said, my peace that passeth all understanding? Was there a person in the New Testament that said that I don't just give you the peace like the world has, but I give you a peace that passeth all understanding? Was there a guy that talked about a message of peace? Was there a guy that in the flying in the face of the Pauline doctrine that you had to worry about these scary times of the seasons, was there a guy that said, peace? Yes, his name was Yeshua. And in verse number 3, when they say peace, sudden destruction will come upon them. Paul puts Yeshua in the they category. He's a we, Yeshua's they. Paul's doctrine is a we, Yeshua's doctrine is a they. Paul's doctrine was demonstrably, admittedly, and promoted even by Paul himself as a different doctrine. Yeshua is the one that said peace and safety. And Paul says those that follow that are going to have destruction come upon them. Folks, that's disgusting. If you believe in the message of Yeshua, that is a disgusting message being espoused by Paul. And you are perfectly within your rights to embrace that disgusting message. You're completely within your rights to continue to hold to your breast that disgusting message, even though that you know it's not the message of Yeshua. That's your right. But you also have the right to know that Paul was preaching something different than Yeshua, and that Paul was admittedly against Yeshua and even promoted himself against Yeshua. And if you don't believe it, let's look down at verses 12 through 13. And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. Appreciate Paul, he was saying. Appreciate me as the only source of truth. Appreciate me as the only source of true enlightenment. These are the words Paul was saying. And then in verse 14, he says, now we exhort you, brethren, warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, and be patient towards all men. He's saying, watch those that are out of step. That's what unruly means in Jerusalem. Those that won't dance to my tune. He was warning them about the apostles of Yeshua, the ones preaching peace from the Prince of Peace, the peace that passes all understanding. That's what they don't want you to have. From the day Paul wrote these words to the day that the words of your morning paper were written today, they don't want you to have peace. They don't want you to have the peace that Yeshua left behind. They don't want you to get aligned with the Prince of Peace, because that lets you know that there are no scary signs to come, that the kingdom of heaven does not come with outward displays, that the kingdom of heaven is not on its way, the kingdom of heaven that has been here to your heart. You are not filled with original sin. You've got the spark of divinity within, and that is the message they don't want you to hear. So that is the message I will continue to bring to you nonstop. And that's what we're all about. As we look at 2 Thessalonians, Paul really begins to pour it on. And he really begins to talk about who's who and what's what. First, 2 Thessalonians, which was, of course, the second letter that Paul wrote, chapter 1, verse 7 through 9, and to you who are troubled, rest with us. For when the Lord shall be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, taking vengeance upon them that know not God and that obey not the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, who shall be punished with everlasting destruction. Paul is talking about plastic Jesus here. Paul's saying plastic Jesus is coming, and boy, is he pissed. Plastic Jesus is coming, and boy, is he pissed. Now, all we have to do is go back to 1 Thessalonians, realize that Paul was preaching against those that preach peace. Remember again, let me remind you, Yeshua was called the Prince of Peace. Yeshua said, my peace I leave with you. My peace I leave with you, not as the world gives, but the peace that passes all understanding I give to you. Yeshua said, my message is a message of peace. I am the Prince of Peace. And Paul preached against peace. Paul preached against the Prince of Peace. Now, Yeshua is the Prince of Peace by his own confession. Does this sound like the Prince of Peace coming back with flaming fire, fires of hell? Can you see the Prince of Peace coming back with fires of hell, taking vengeance, which means inflicting retribution and vengeance? Can you see the Prince of Peace coming back and inflicting retribution and vengeance, coming with the fires of hell? Remember, God is love. God is love, but he's coming back with the fires of hell, inflicting retribution and vengeance. But God is love. Sounds just like a loving God, doesn't it? Sounds just like the Prince of Peace, doesn't it? Of course it doesn't. It's ridiculous. It's not the Prince of Peace. It's not the God who is love. Yeshua is the God, the Elohim, that is love. Yeshua is the Prince of Peace. Who does this sound like? This sounds just like the Lord who destroyed the earth of Genesis 1:1 with his fiery anger blown through his nostrils. Let me remind you of Jeremiah 4:23. The earth was destroyed by the presence of the Lord and by his fierce anger through his nostrils with fire. That's exactly what this sounds like. That's exactly what this sounds like. Not the coming of the Prince of Peace, not the coming of the God of love, which has already happened, but the return of an angry, jealous, fiery God with retribution and vengeance on his mind sounds just like the Lord. And who is this vengeance being poured out upon in verse number 8? They that obey not the gospel, they that obey not Paul's gospel, those are the ones that this retribution is being poured out upon by this God that comes back. Folks, you have here the birth of the turn or burn mentality, the birth of eternal fire insurance, the birth of a doctrine that is so foreign to Yeshua that it beggars description. And if you can't see that, I can't make it any more plain. Maybe this isn't the place for you. If you want to live in fear and dread and loathing, then you need to read and stay in Paul's pages. If you want fear and loathing, Paul's pages are the place for you. If you want peace, if you want peace that passes all understanding, if you want to know that you're not filled with sin but have the spark of divinity within, Paul's pages are not for you. The words of Yeshua, the way, the truth, the life of Yeshua, that is what is for you. And it's very clearly spelled out in the New Testament. So all you have to do is decide which way you want to go. Listen to Cliff as he takes us out, and he'll tell you how to get in touch with me. And until tomorrow, till our next broadcast, I am the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty. And as always, I'm wishing you peace and enlightenment.
Stay connected with the Christian Whistleblower at www.christianwhistleblower.com. On Facebook, follow Jeffrey Daugherty and Jeffrey Daugherty Show, and on Twitter at NC Kabbalah. Visit ChristianWhistleblower.com today to learn how to create yourself and to live the life you'll love.